This holiday season, experience the charming destination of Ottawa, Illinois. Meander through the Kris Kringle Market, take a stroll downtown, check out the gingerbread displays, and enjoy fun shopping experiences. Plan your stay in Ottawa at visitottawail.com. Today is Wednesday. It's December 18th, 2024, 2:36 in the afternoon. Hi, I'm John Williams. You found the Mincing Rascals podcast, the podcast for people who care about Chicago. By the way, I'm wearing a cranberry-colored tie today because we did some work for the Salvation Army, and this is the closest I had to a red kettle color. Anyway, you can hear me weekdays on WGN Radio from 10 to 2.
I'm Marge Halperin, a longtime employee of various government agencies doing reform work, communications consulting, currently doing my best as an activist in the community, challenging authority.
I'm Kate Plies, former Chicago reporter and columnist, now writing the Chicago History website, Roseland, Chicago, 1972.
I'm Eric Zorn. I'm a former Tribune columnist. I like to think of myself as the current publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, a weekly newsletter powered by Substack.
You hardly sound like you sound like a version of you there, Eric, but you're doing okay, right?
We're doing okay. Yeah, I tested positive for COVID yesterday, but I'm doing okay.
I love how we are able to drop that casually in conversation these days. Obviously, over the last 4 years, the gravity of that has shifted to now, hey, I got a cold. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, it was a bad cold last night, and I'm feeling pretty good right now. I thought this morning, like, oh, I could never do the Mincing Rascals, and then, I feel pretty good. So
you quarantining yourself?
My doctor just said, it's pretty much like a bad cold these days for most people, and it goes away actually faster than a bad cold. So we'll see.
I haven't heard that, but that's interesting.
I think you're right to skip the Paxlovid. It made me rebound when I had it last year. So
percentage-wise, no more rebound with COVID than without it, I have read.
Yeah, so it basically made the symptoms last 2 extra weeks for me since I went through it. Stopped, went through it again.
We're saying don't take Paxlovid if you get COVID. The assembled, by the way, we have
pretty
about
much.
As much business talking about this as RFK Jr., but
maybe a little more.
Maybe just actually a little more, except none of us are about to be HHS. So how about that?
Well, my doctor prescribed it for me, but he said I wouldn't take it if I were you. And so,
really? What an interesting mixed set of signals there. Here you go.
I asked for it.
Oh, you did.
Said, well, I'll prescribe it for you, but I don't recommend it.
But you guys are fearful that it will actually cause the COVID to come back or to rebound worse than it is? I wouldn't.
No. What I was saying is the statistics show while people call it a Paxlovid rebound, there is no evidence that you get a rebound more often if you take Paxlovid or if you don't. There's a rebound factor within COVID, apparently. They used to think it was only Paxlovid, but it's not, and it does not. It does, on the other hand, they currently think they could change their mind, find some new statistic later. But right now, they also think it diminishes your chance of long COVID.
Oh, well,
so
that's
Paxlovid?
I would take it.
Oh,
All right. I'm going to look into it again.
Result.
Well, if you know somebody with long COVID, that is life-changing. My mom has not had taste or smell for 25 years. And think about that. For the last 25 years, my mom has not tasted a cup of coffee or the tomato sauce on spaghetti. It's all a zero to her.
What happened to her?
Well, it was 25 years ago. What was that?
She got bonked on the head. Either way, if you don't have taste and smell, your life is compromised every day.
It is. And that happened to a very good friend of mine who got COVID very early on and still pretty much has almost no taste or smell. And she is a gourmet cook.
Imagine
having that happen to you.
I'm just really glad to see that we are all safe after another week of the apparent drone attack coming out of New Jersey. On a scale of 1 to 10, are you guys worried about this? And what's your best explanation for what's going on here? Andy Kim, the Democrat senator from New Jersey a few days ago,
posted a cluster of drones on social media, and then a couple days later, I think it was Saturday, said, oh, we think those were just airplanes, never mind, which is, I think, a lot of what's going on. To be honest with you, I'm surprised that Congress has had hearings about this, and the Department of Defense has been called to task on explaining what's going on, and that some members of the media are outraged that we don't know what it is. I don't know that this rises to the level of any of that.
I'm as much entertained as I am concerned, maybe even more entertained. I've heard the government spokespeople say it's a mix of things. It's some surveillance drones, law enforcement, that is, but also airplanes. And there was another member of Congress who posted something, turned out to be the stars in the Orion belt, Orion's belt, you know, constellation. The memes are very entertaining, but I, you know, it's a mix of things, but I don't know why they didn't answer more specifically at the beginning. That was just silly. That was just, if you know that there's some explanations, just say so. And that created all this concern unnecessarily. There's drones in the sky all the time for various reasons, and that's what they say now. Why didn't they just say that at the beginning?
Say that we don't know exactly what it is.
Say it's a mix. Yes, there are law enforcement drones, but there are also airplanes that it's hard to tell the difference. There are stars in the sky. Don't be confused. You know, there are a lot of explanations.
It is astonishing that politicians never seem to understand that when they start sounding like the mayor of Amity and Jaws, you know, there's no shark. Everybody go in the water. Just ignore it. When you start to sound like that, it's never going to end well for you. So I completely agree with you, Marge. They created a huge part of whatever this problem actually
the
is.
The opening. Because the nonsense filled the vacuum.
You know what? We don't even know how much nonsense it is. I mean, I'm sure that it is partially social hysteria now, but it began with actual excess drone sightings, and the feds and even the state level failed to respond to mayors, to U.S. representatives, even to at least one U.S. senator. When the federal government will not respond to those level of lawmakers,
well, what are they supposed to do? What's the response?
Kind of strange.
What's the response that we're missing?
Well, they were those various levels of people, including the Connecticut senator, were saying that they literally couldn't get any answer out of the federal government. So they just blew all these people off for several weeks. Then they send Anthony Mayorkas, Homeland Secretary, around to the various talk shows to tell everyone, we don't know what it is, but somehow we know it's not a problem. Who could possibly find that a good argument to not worry? So I do feel like they completely created a social hysteria, whether or not it is a social hysteria.
It feels War of the Worlds to me.
Well, yeah.
And by the way, set in New Jersey.
Yes. How perfect is that?
Yeah. Well, the idea that it would be foreign intelligence surveillance or people like trying to hover over one of Trump's clubs, I think that's almost certainly false. And the idea that it's aliens is preposterously false. So it's probably just a combination of normal sky activity. Plus, maybe there's some pranksters out there. So, well, you know, now that everyone's excited about the drones, let's throw up a few more drones and get people all worried about it. I wouldn't put that past anybody. I don't think anything nefarious is going on, at the risk of sounding like the mayor of Amityville. I just can't believe that it's actually anything really out of the ordinary right now, except maybe there's some pranksters who are adding to the drone excitement.
What concerns me? It is not untrue to say that drones can be an issue, that drones can be weaponized. Spying is itself bad enough if it's going on over military bases, over nuclear plants. There were reliable reports that the drones were hovering around nuclear plants in New Jersey, and they definitely, this absolutely happened, that some drones shut down the Stewart International Airport in upstate New York. It's a little ways north of Manhattan. So that's a combination public airport, and they've got military stuff there. The New York National Guard is located there, and I think a Marine Reserve. And, you know, basically what this exposes is that the government has had literally decades to think about how drones should be perhaps restricted, and what to do about them, how to defend at least sensitive places from them. Only now that this has been a thing for a month, are they finally calling in Congress for more funding to maybe be able to actually shoot a drone down, I guess. Apparently, what we're seeing is that right now, they can't. And the fact is, that is concerning, because a drone could be weaponized.
Oh, easily. And I'm not diminishing that possibility at all. There was an assassination attempt with a drone a few years back, where someone just flew a drone into a political rally and went after a politician who was over in Europe somewhere. So there's no question that the larger issue of drones and the ability that they have to spy on people, the government or a foreign government, and also create all kinds of havoc, that's all real. I just don't know that what we're seeing right now is anything particularly out of the ordinary.
Agreed. We don't know.
We need to know. And if, Donald Trump is even saying he thinks the government knows things it's not saying right now. And I think that that's irresponsible. If that's true, the government's doing it. It's irresponsible of Trump to be saying it if it's not true. He's just, pulling it out of his rear end. The larger issue of drones is a very interesting and potentially troubling one. It's got some of the same kind of issues, or it has the same feel as the artificial intelligence issue, which is, these are technologies that we don't really have a very good handle on, and that it could end up really being problematic.
No matter what's going on, we have no ability to plan in advance guardrails for like anything. We can't even handle Facebook and phones for our kids, much less drones that could be weaponized for assassinations. Or, frankly, it would be very easy to make a dirty bomb out of a drone.
This path you're going down is exactly what I'm talking about, though. We are making it sound so much worse than it is. I mean, a car could be made into a bomb, and drones are a means of warfare in Ukraine. So I get it. But I think it's mostly guys named Kevin and Steve, and they're saying, look, we're on the news. And at some point, drones might surveil us and we won't like it, but I'm not exercised by it. I'm more amused by it than anything else, both the phenomena and the reaction. Yeah, I'm comfortably naive about a lot of things, and I know that I am. But a lot of things I'm willing to not let bother me until it has to bother me. Put it this way.
I agree, John.
Well, the internet is a great source, and then we've ruined it with Twitter or whatever. I mean, think about how annoying and vexing the internet can be, and yet what a great resource it can be. And it's the same with drones. We thought they were going to deliver pizzas and help real estate agents and farmers. And now this technology is also going to be a nuisance in our lives. But I'm not worried about somebody bombing or spying on me.
I have a little more trust in government. I don't think it's quite that they have no plans whatsoever and never thought about it. I wouldn't believe that for a minute. But I think what's happened is this kind of speculation is what, like you said, John, that's the danger. I mean, there are people now shining laser lights on what they think are drones, but are actually airplanes. Those airplanes could crash. They're shining them into the pilots' windows. They think there's some alien in there or something.
Yeah.
It's harmful. There's the Mastriano, the congressman from Pennsylvania, retweeted a meme that it said something like, a drone captured off Orange Beach in New Jersey, now taken to an undisclosed location. Right. Well, it was the prop from Star Trek, and people in official capacity. And I think those of us who have an audience should be a little careful about wild speculation. That's all.
Well, I don't think I was wildly speculating. I did point out that I don't think anything really horrible is going on, but I do think it shows a real big blind spot for the government.
They don't know if it's a blind spot.
Well, no, they shut down the International Stewart Airport. That seems like a big blind spot.
I would imagine regulations are always behind the technology. Something happens and then we react to it. Something happens and then we react to it. So what the solution will be to this, I guess I'll let the Space Force figure out. But I accept that, Kate, that maybe we're late to the game, but only because the game hadn't started yet.
It could usefully move this forward before something nefarious can happen. So in that sense, this could be a good thing.
I will add that a quick Google shows me USA Today says U.S. military forces do have the authority to take down a drone from the sky, or they can cut the navigational jam radio, cut their navigational links. There are things they can do. I think they've been, not to make a bad pun, but on their radar for some time. Just because they didn't talk to us about it doesn't mean national security experts aren't.
Okay, that's not the message they were putting out. Like,
no, that was absolutely.
Saying, oh, no, we really can't do anything because it would be dangerous for us.
And it would be dangerous to react quickly till they know, but it was foolish of them not to give better PR.
On our website at WGNradio.com, the number one most searched topic. Like, you could click on the schedule or the Blackhawks game. You could have a button you could listen to. We get a lot of hits on that. The number one thing last week was, is it legal to shoot a drone out of the sky?
Not for you to do it, John. Don't do it.
The government maybe can, but you and I cannot. Speaking of our government, Brandon Johnson's budget. Austin Burke can't be with us today, and I wanted him to take the lead on this a little bit. But he posted the Chicago City Council has approved Brandon Johnson's record spending $17.3 billion budget on a 27-23 vote. The budget does not include a property tax hike, and then it does include all of these fees, among them your garbage or your checkout bag. The plastic bag at the Jewel is now going to go from 7 cents to 10 cents. There will be more automated speed ticket cameras. The parking garage tax hike will be from 22 to 20, almost 4%. Well, 23.35. There will be an amusement tax on live events and streaming services, even Netflix, that will go from 9% to 10.25%. Here in Chicago, you'll pay 10.25% on your Netflix bill because that's how we're going to shore this thing up. Eric, what's your general thought about this? I said on the radio a couple of times that what's a mayor to do, right? If you're $300 million short and you can't cut $300 million in services, maybe you can. I'll let you comment on that. But, I mean, no, we didn't want to raise the tax on liquor. And I drink liquor. And I was like, all right, I'll drink my fair share. Let's go. That seems painless enough. I don't have to pay it if I don't want.
Well, he did cut about $154 million. The council did end up cutting about $154 million in city expenses. It was interesting to note that they now kind of acknowledge that the speed cameras are there for revenue and not for safety, that they're going to get another $11.4
million.
Well,
that is an interesting observation, isn't it, now that you mention it? Yeah, keep going, Eric.
The captain's going, oh, it's all about safety. It's all about the children. Well, it's about raising revenue. I certainly understand that they need revenue. They need to persuade the citizens, first of all, that they're doing their best to run an efficient ship there. I think that some of these cuts that they made were cuts in good faith. Clearly, the process itself was pretty toxic, and Johnson looks like he's lost control of the council. But you're right; it's very difficult to raise revenue, especially when you've made a pledge not to raise property taxes. And then he got into, well, first he said $300 million, then he said $150 million property taxes, then $68 million. Now it's down to zero. He's not going to raise property taxes at all. I think that property taxes should go up with inflation, at least, and that property taxes are, of these fees and taxes that he's added on, is one of the more progressive forms of taxation. That if you have a nicer house, a bigger house, you're going to pay more in property taxes than if you don't. I think that Johnson sort of betrayed his progressive roots by not sticking to the. But I mean, by saying the property tax is regressive, which it's not, and vowing not to do that, he put himself into a box, and now he's having a hard time breaking out of it.
I'm interested in your comment about he lost control of the council, because I'm wondering if this isn't a silver lining in some way. I'm sure Austin, I won't speak for him, but I'd love to hear his answer to that question, because and the media is widely judging Johnson for failing to get the knee-jerk unanimous approval that mayors have gotten in the past, for which many of us have complained the council wasn't doing their job. They need to push back. Johnson claimed this to be a collaborative process. I think it sure was, not in the way he wanted, but in the end, the council had a lot of input. Maybe this is a good direction for the city.
Well, I do think you're right there, Marge. It's one of those things where use the crisis as an opportunity. I think it's great if this is what really jolts the council into becoming a real legislative branch of government that becomes an actual check and balance situation. And in fact, during the meeting, Alderman Villegas was specifically saying, this means when we go to Springfield with our hands out asking for money, what we should also be talking about is city charter, which of course is Austin's big goal. And this definitely points that out. You know, what's funny too is in his press conference after the meeting, Marge, I don't know if you had time to look at the whole thing, but he was specifically saying, when someone asked about the council feeling its oats sort of thing, he was like, well, you know, when I was an activist, I was telling the council to speak up. So now, you know, them speaking up like this was not a problem or a rebuke to me sort of thing. It means I have now been successful as an activist.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. It's a little
twisted.
Oh,
it was hilarious. It was really
reverse means by which he did it, though. Yeah. I mean,
oh, my God. It's not that they just said no to Johnson that shows he lost control of the council. That's kind of the bad thing here. What is really bad for Johnson is the way it shows that he never talked to them in putting this budget together. He didn't bother to consult with even his closest allies before crafting a budget with a $300 million property tax increase when he said he would never increase it. And then, of course, as I think it was Alderman Vasquez who pointed out during the meeting, you know, hey, within a few weeks, we got rid of $300 million in taxes by finding efficiencies and other ways to do it. And that means we probably could have done more. And this shows that I was right, that we should have been doing an audit of every city department to find more efficiencies, which Johnson had, you know, resisted doing because he doesn't want anybody to lose a job. Anyway, I think that's the real story here, that he didn't bother to have this conversation with anybody before coming out with a budget. And that's why this whole process had to, you know, happen afterward.
Well, yes. And I was going to say, not to negate what Maria Haddon said, 49th Ward Alder, who is one of those allies that was not consulted, who said repeatedly, because the process was not clear cut from the beginning, and we had to push back and we had to have version 1, 2, 3, and 4, maybe in the end, we wasted a lot of time that we should have been using for other important governing priorities. Her point being particularly how to fortify the city in advance of whatever retribution Trump has in mind for us as a sanctuary city or otherwise. So there's a lot of other things they could have been doing during all this time. Since you mentioned the press conference, so I'll throw in one more thing, because I did hear one quote that still just has me shaking my head. They asked, you know, were you sad about some of the cuts or disappointed? How do you feel about the cuts? He said, yeah, I was sad. It's not what I wanted. I did protect a lot of things. But he said, but look, I show up for work every day. Like, Cool. What was the point of that? Like a participation medal?
Brad, working last weekend again too. Look at me. I work on the weekend.
I show up for work every day.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and if you didn't, we would.
Did he say as a black man with a black family he was doing that too?
No,
that's another.
No, but no. He did bring up slavery. He did manage to bring up slavery. And that was when, now during the press conference, you don't see the person asking the question. It sounded like Craig Delamore to me was asking him about, you know, you're talking about finding progressive revenue for next year. Are you talking about trying to get Governor Pritzker to try again for a graduated income tax? And that is obviously what he's saying, but Johnson doesn't really want to come right out and say that literally. So he kind of danced around it again. And then I think it was Craig Delamore came back and said, well, you know, come on. You have to admit that the ultra rich, which is something that Brandon Johnson said about, if you were doing a drinking game during this press conference, ultra rich would have had you under the table. He said it so many times. Anyway, Craig Delamore was like, you know, let's face it, the ultra rich have evaded paying their fair share of taxes this long. So can you count on that, you know, happening next year? And at that point, Brandon Johnson said, well, you know, that's true. They have evaded it for a long time in the same way that, oh, gosh, let me see. I think I actually wrote this. I think I actually copied this into my. Yeah, he said, you're not wrong about that. They certainly spent a whole lot on money to distort the truth. Once upon a time, the ultra rich were pretty successful in preventing black people from being liberated. We fought for liberation in this country to end slavery. There's no question here that there are forces that want to keep people restrained and without the ability to live a life that pursues happiness. Now, that was the answer to the question, are you really going to get Governor Pritzker to try again for a graduated income tax? So, yeah, it was quite a press conference.
Yeah, no kidding. He's famous for taking the bait, isn't he? And then giving his little sort of a campaigny speech or flowery speech, and people are left scratching their heads, and it doesn't get the job done.
And yet, when you look at the Trump nominees, he's not wrong.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, they're all billionaires.
Oh, yeah, right, sure.
Taking control of the government, and who's going to pay for that? We are.
Oh, well, we'd all love the ultra-rich or
the ultra-rich are running.
But the state, unfortunately, did vote down the—I mean, I voted for it. I would have liked the graduated income tax myself. My side did not win on that. And both Governor Pritzker's office and the legislative leaders all give a big thumbs down to bringing that up again just last month when the CTU was floating that as their answer for paying for their contract. So it seems unlikely that they've all turned around on that in the past few weeks and that now they're planning on doing that for Chicago's budget for next year.
We're circling back to an old topic here. It was 2020 when that referendum was for the graduated income tax.
Yeah.
I was thinking this is how the federal government does it. And it makes perfect sense that people who make more money would pay a higher percentage.
Yeah.
It just made perfect sense to me. Austin and I had a debate in print and on the radio about it. He was, you know, and I think basically his side won on that because people don't trust the government to do good things with the money that they send them. And that was basically what it came down to. And a lot of fear campaigns about, well, they're going to start taxing this then and that, and it's going to open the door to all kinds of terrible things. But just as a fundamental principle of fairness, and you want to raise the revenue, that would be a great way to do it for the city and for the state. But it lost, and J.B. Pritzker dumped $50 million or so into the campaign and couldn't persuade people. I don't see why he would want to do that again.
Ken Griffin countered him, and now he moved out of state.
The amount of money spent on that alone, it was amazing to me. The Mincing Rascals will keep mincing here, but first just give me a minute to mention this. This holiday season, you can experience the charming destination of Ottawa, Illinois, grab a mug of hot cocoa, and meander through the Kris Kringle Market, take a stroll downtown to see the gingerbread window displays, and enjoy fun shopping experiences, and then take a drive to Ottawa's many parks adorned with hundreds of festive lights. How about a movie at the Roxy? Start making holiday memories in Ottawa. Plan your stay at visitottawail.com. Brought to you by Ottawa, the middle of everywhere, and the Illinois Office of Tourism. And now, back to this week's edition of The Mincing Rascals. By the way, Marge, you brought up Donald Trump a couple of times here. I am going to segue to that topic. This is what it's going to be like for the next 4 years. I thought that having won the election, Donald Trump would no longer need to be so strident. He's going to sue the Des Moines Register and pollster Ann Selzer. He says that she and the newspaper committed consumer fraud with election interference. Just before the election, Selzer's polling firm, we talked about this here, said that maybe Trump would lose Iowa, and obviously he did not. The bar for libel or slander of a public official is so high, you wonder what's the point of pursuing this. It's not like they're getting the poll wrong or the sample wrong, cost him the election. He won, but he's carrying this grievance around now, and he's suing the Des Moines Register. What First Amendment attorney does he have that is advising him that they did anything wrong except embarrass themselves, or in her case anyway? She says she's not going to do politics anymore. But I don't know who's telling him that he has a case here. And this isn't the only instance where Donald Trump is going after mainstream media members for things that don't seem to be necessary. Eric, you wrote about this in the Picayune Sentinel.
Right. I mean, I thought that the capitulation that ABC showed to him when they settled that suit on Saturday, you know, there was a suit against ABC and George Stephanopoulos because during an interview, I think it was in March, maybe Stephanopoulos several times said that a jury had found Trump liable for rape, and they had not found him liable for rape. They had found him liable for digital penetration of somebody, which is not technically rape under New York law, even though the judge in the case said, well, yeah, this is kind of a common understanding of what we mean by rape. And Stephanopoulos went with that, and I think it would have been a really, really hard case for Trump's lawyers to make in that case, because, as you say, the bar for defaming a public figure is very high. And it just looked like they were just, you know, kissing the ring and trying. The ABC was just trying to make nice with Trump because they don't want to risk his wrath. The Des Moines Register suit seems completely appalling to me. That this pollster's had a 3 percentage point lead, I think, for Trump in Iowa. Or sorry, for Harris in Iowa. But it turned out that Trump won Iowa handily. Was her polling sample size off? Clearly, it was. Did that affect the election at all? Did it affect anybody's vote? I've never seen any proof that the polling results affect people's votes.
And where was the malice? And where was the intent to harm Trump? I mean,
I think what we're seeing is
that's an issue too.
That he's just going to be that he's going to threaten people, and he's going to file suit, and he's going to try to get his Justice Department to go after Liz Cheney and other people like that, because you know he has found over the years that the legal system is an excellent way to intimidate people and to silence them. And you know, he did it in his construction business. He did it, you know, he has done it all along. And so we're going to see this bullying going on, and you're going to see these major organizations. I mean, look at Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, and Jeff Bezos. They're all donating $1 million to Trump's inaugural costs. Like, you know, that's just sucking up to the incoming president. And what are we to make of that?
Well,
these companies are going to, and we're going to all end up like X, like Twitter, former Twitter.
No, that's not what that means.
What it means to me is that these major corporations are not going to be part of any sort of resistance at all. That they're going to simply bow down to Trump and not dare to challenge him because they're afraid of lawsuits. And, you know, I think this stuff is very ominous, what we're seeing right
now. Okay, but that's the meanest interpretation of their intent. I mean, you are one of the major corporations in America. A new administration is coming in. Naturally, you'd like to sort of pave the path between the two of you and make things as easy and equitable as possible. And you see it as them bowing down and kissing the ring. It seems to me like it's just good business. Take Trump out of it, for instance. A new administration comes in. You're the richest company in the world with the richest people in the world running it. Yeah, you donate $1 million to the inaugural campaign. You don't miss it. Eric, I'm toying with you a little bit there, but that's, if it weren't Donald Trump, what I just said would make perfect sense.
We gave much less to Biden's inaugural transition. I think something like a quarter of that.
I would rephrase that, John. If it weren't a media company, it would make more sense. That's the problem with media and its corporate interests. I mean, that is what you just said is the most charitable explanation. And there's a good version of that in that Tangle newsletter, which I've become pretty interested in to hear the both sides newsletter. But they say this is how a corporation should act, protecting their shareholders and making nice with a new administration that can regulate the heck out of them or do favors for them. Sure, that's but what corporations, I was going to say that's fine if they're not a media company. Well, it's not fine if they're a healthcare company, in my opinion. There's certain other categories that that don't do... Capitalism isn't fit for certain kinds of businesses, in my opinion.
Okay,
I guess that's my conclusion. I think media should be above that kind of control, but they're not. They're shareholder-driven like lots of others, and healthcare should be too, and we see the consequences of the fact that they're not either.
I'm thinking of all the law firms that make campaign contributions to the candidates running for attorney general, including incumbents who have no chance of losing, and yet they will throw money in there, and I don't really like the sound of that either, but it's not unprecedented. This is just kind of what you do. I wish none of them did it, but I'm not as cynical as Eric Zorn is about the motivation of Mark Zuckerberg here. I put it this way, Eric, the proof will be in the pudding. Maybe they will completely capitulate and they'll back off or they'll pay settlements to Donald Trump rather than fight a First Amendment case in court, which I would have loved to see that play out. I'd love to see the George Stephanopoulos. You might have some case law there. If he had said sexual assault instead of rape, maybe that would have made this whole thing go away. But he didn't. Was it an honest mistake? Was he coloring it to make Trump look worse? I think that would be an interesting... I think we would all benefit from that actually playing out. Instead, they paid Trump's foundation $15 million. I think that was the sum. I think that's where it went. Didn't go.
I don't think Trump.
Plus legal fees of another million.
I don't think Trump, yes, $16 million, I guess, total. I don't think Trump wanted to spend any time for the public to be weighing whether the digital penetration that he was found responsible for by the jury is technically rape or not, or whether that's defaming him by saying that. I don't think that Trump's people wanted him to do that. There's, of course, the question is, why did ABC do this? Maybe there were some other reasons. Maybe they were afraid of what they were going to find out in discovery. Maybe there were memos going around saying, don't call it rape, and Stephanopoulos ignored that. Maybe that, who knows, because everyone is all so tight-lipped about it. But I have lost confidence in ABC News myself. I just like...
For this reason.
Yeah, I mean, can we trust them to report honestly about the Trump administration at all anymore?
Morning Joe had a meeting with the president after he got elected, and some people raised their eyebrows at that. What are those two doing, you know, being squired into Mar-a-Lago or wherever it was, except that they were trying to, I don't want to say court his favor, but rather open up a line of communications. Maybe he'll come on their show someday.
I think it's a very different question about what happened there. And I've defended Scarborough and Brzezinski about that. I think if you get a chance to have an on-the-record or off-the-record conversation with a major public figure like that, a major political leader, you take it, and reporters do it all the time. Rahm Emanuel used to have off-the-record meetings with reporters a lot, and I don't think that was inappropriate, that you just want to talk about issues, clear the air, find out stuff. I don't think that was wrong, and I think the proof in that is going to be in the show, in MSNBC's Morning Joe show. If you hear them cozying up to Trump or forgiving him for things or being soft on him, then you can say, well, yeah, they were bought and paid for or somehow compromised by that meeting. I don't see, as a journalist, I don't see meeting with a public official like that to be inherently compromising.
But the underlying concern here is that you'd better be nice to this president or his cabinet or his team, or else they're going to make life difficult for you. They're going to sue you. They're going to maybe threaten the broadcast license. I don't think networks have broadcast licenses, but Donald Trump has threatened to pull the broadcast license from NBC. NBC, I don't think, has a broadcast license. Stations do. Individual stations do. Maybe their O&Os would. But
their O&Os.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that would have been the
owned and operated.
The president.
Yeah, the important thing is various employees like George Stephanopoulos at ABC and people at the Washington Post, the New York Times, et cetera. Are they gonna be pressured to not say more controversial things? Will they edit out more controversial things because the publications, the broadcast networks don't want to possibly come up against a lawsuit? That's really the issue.
Yeah. Well, when you think about the lack of an endorsement for Kamala Harris or saying something about Donald Trump by the Washington Post and the Chicago Tribune, and the list goes on, maybe we shouldn't be surprised to see this sort of thing playing out. The president-elect is also going after Liz Cheney. He said on Truth Social this morning that Cheney could be in a lot of trouble, quote-unquote, based on a report released by House GOP Representative Barry Loudermilk. In that report, Loudermilk singles out Cheney and claims that she colluded with former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson, whose explosive testimony was crucial to the former Select Committee's investigation. I'm reading from CNN here. Quote, "These people ought to be ashamed of themselves," Donald Trump said. "I know they aren't, so we'll go ahead and shame them. Wait," he said, "until Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard get in there." That last sentence is pretty... You're laughing. Now, that I thought was chilling, Marge.
It's just that hyperbole is the only language he speaks. And how much can they really do? What's wrong with that? She colluded with a witness. She was on the committee and helped find witnesses to bring the truth out. That's not called colluding. That's called her job. Your point earlier about what kind of First Amendment lawyer did he find? He found a lawyer who would take his money. You know, that's all he needs. They don't have to have any expertise. Most of his lawyers do not. We've seen that before. They've been miserable in court. They're not necessarily specialists in the area that they're trying on his behalf or representing him on. And he just has money. Ronnie Jackson supposedly wrote his good health report when he was, you know, president. Clearly he wrote it himself. And a lot of these legal papers, he writes in sentences. You see it in all caps. No lawyer writes like that. He does it himself. He just needs people to take his money for whatever it is he wants to claim. And he will be in a position to intimidate people further. That part is chilling. I agree.
And the sort of capitulation he's getting from other members of the Congress. It's not just Donald Trump saying this. Plenty of Republicans are now saying, yeah, we ought to look into this. We need to have some sort of military tribunal or some sort of, I don't know what legal action they would take, but it's not like the members of the House and Senate are throwing up their hands saying, dude, you won. It's all in the rearview mirror. Let's just go forward. She didn't do anything wrong. I mean, my God, we watched the thing on TV. It was a service to America. And you won. You don't have to do this anymore.
Well, I think the point is not really to intimidate Liz Cheney, but to intimidate all kinds of other people going forward who will be afraid to get caught in the crossfire, in their crosshairs, I should say, when they're not as high profile as someone like Liz Cheney. For Liz Cheney, it would be like the best thing that could ever happen to her if they tried coming after her. She can't get elected as a Republican anymore. Democrats don't like her, even though they were using her on the campaign trail, because her positions are extreme. Yes, we applaud what she did as part of the January 6th group. Congressional committee investigating it, but we would never vote for her, anyone who is in any way center or left of center, because of her really pretty extreme positions. So what would be great for her career right now? Definitely have Trump come after her, and the amount of money that will come rolling in to her defense fund and the publicity for her would just be fabulous. I'm sure she's hoping for it. I would be if I was her.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you're being facetious or not. I don't think so, because given the courts that he appointed, I wouldn't guarantee how this would come out. Oh. I think she's better off if he leaves her alone.
I was buying what Kate was selling, and I'll
start up the GoFundMe.
I don't get dismayed by a lot of this. I think you've kind of maybe picked up on my tone. I'm like, no, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. This one bothers me more than any of the things we've talked about. I think that if we put Liz Cheney on trial or somehow prosecute her or harass her, if members of Congress do that, I think that will be disturbing. That'll be beyond shameful. That will be troubling to me. This is a check against everything that is wrong about government is when other members of the Congress say, hey, we need to do an investigation here. And then when they do nothing wrong, you prosecute them for even seeing if our politicians are lying to us. That's chilling. That's terrible.
But you're jumping the gun here. I mean, I don't think I could sleep a wink if I jumped at everything that he said. This is definitely a time to focus on what he does and not what he says. So much of what happened in his first term is he made claims and accusations, and his language was disgusting and offensive in a lot of ways, but he didn't act on a lot of it. I'm not sure how well he will be able to act on these things in 2.0.
Do you have a feel for Kash Patel?
Yeah, but let's see him get it. Let's see him get approved.
Oh, really? You don't think that's going to happen?
I don't have enough feel yet for how the Congress is going to act in hearings. They're not going to do anything until January, by which time three members of the House will have been plucked out to be in his administration. They'll have a one vote margin, perhaps, in the House. The Senate is also a very narrow margin. It takes only one or two people to stand up and be like, you know, Kristen Sinema or Joe Manchin for the Republicans to stop some things from happening and to cause some trouble. Nancy Mace loves publicity. What is she going to do when the publicity from her having been in the Stephanopoulos interview and all this happened?
Yeah, but you talk about intimidation. So aren't they saying that if you're not with us, we'll primary you? If you're not with us, we will actually find somebody to run against you in the party, right?
They are, but there are a certain number in the House, is it like 12, something like that, who are Republicans who won in districts where Biden and Harris probably. So I'm not sure how big a threat that will turn out to be. That could be a benefit for some. I mean, you just got to let it all play out a little and see what actually happens. I mean, I could be a nervous wreck January 24th. First, probably not, but maybe the 30th, when we see what he actually is going to do. But for now, there's a lot of threats and there are reasons to think they can't follow through. For example, I heard an interview with his first communications director from round one, who said one of the big problems then was that the cabinet members were not good marketers, and they didn't promote Trump's agenda in the media the way Trump wanted. Both the communications guy and the president at the time were very frustrated by this. So now he's got all these pretty boy faces who can be on TV and give his agenda. They don't know thing one about how to run a department. Kash Patel gets the FBI. There's a pretty staunch bureaucracy. I mean, you know, I've worked in a lot of government places, not federal. Federal is the king of bureaucracy. Let's see how well these TV guys, which I put Kash Patel in that, even though he wasn't a Fox guy, he was a commentator, how well they can actually run a department and turn a ship. Because it's not easy, even if people are aligned with you, to make those changes.
He's been really good at talking the talk, but you do wonder if he can actually do the job. One wonders that about RFK Jr., for that matter. And I wonder where you all think he is right now.
Where is he right now? What I hear is that he is working out in various health clubs in tight jeans and hiking boots.
With his shirt off, yes.
That's the word.
There's a measles outbreak in the Congo that is killing children by the hundreds, if not by the thousands. I mean, it's not just polio. Polio is a concern. And turns out, you know, since McConnell had it as a child, that's going to help keep the polio vaccine. But he's creating, think about what happened with the drones. You raise those questions. What if this is foreign government? What if this is causing autism? You're seeing a lot of Republican congressmen now repeating this idea that there's an epidemic of autism because we didn't used to have so many. Well, it wasn't diagnosed because it wasn't identified. This concept of being on the spectrum is new. There's new definitions. We're all more aware of it. That doesn't mean there are more cases than there used to be. It just means we're focused. Doesn't mean there's more drones than there used to be. It's just somebody saw one and now they're seeing them everywhere, whether they're really drones or not. This kind of hysteria is extremely irresponsible and ultimately could be the most dangerous part of a Trump administration.
Well, the idea that especially the measles vaccine has caused autism has certainly been debunked.
Yes.
It's something that they're going to have to keep talking about because people find it hard to believe, or they don't understand the mechanics, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't help that they did used to have a little bit of mercury in there, which is one of the things that really set people off. Now they've taken it out, but all the studies show that it did not have any effect. Perhaps it will be good for the country to have that conversation, only if we get all the real, you know, information out there. Obviously, I think it could help to bring out older relatives reminding the young people what it was like in the 50s with polio.
Right.
I wasn't around, but I have a lot of older relatives who are still here who either had it or whose parents did. And it's no joke. There's plenty of lived experience still out there to explain to people how dangerous polio is. My understanding, and I could be wrong, but my understanding is that the increase in autism has been shown to be a true increase as opposed to just us being more aware of it. But that is obviously not the same as pinpointing vaccines or anything else right now as being the cause. And
I think
that's really why it's something that's hard to bat away, because we don't have something else right now to point at. And it is such a problem.
But it's not the soaring growth in autism cases that he claims, I don't think. Your point about the national conversation is interesting, Kate, because we had a lot of national conversations that made zero difference in this election.
Optimistic, I know.
You said as long as we get the information out. Well, we don't. I mean, this is the core problem, and that's why I say this is the real danger from Trump. He posted on True Social over the weekend, maybe even yesterday, about the leftover wall materials that were not used, and the U.S. government put them out in the market for sale. He said, you have to get them back. This is irresponsible. It's going to cost us 10 times more.
Fox News has been all over this story this week.
Yes. Well, so I did it. I had an associate, let's say an old classmate on Facebook, who posted, I want to know what my Democrat friends say about this. Well, this Democrat says you ought to do a little research for yourself. I quick Googled. I find an article from the Arizona Republic, which is local. And it says that this stuff is basically junk. In fact, the head of transportation for Texas thought they'd buy it and build their own wall. But he said he looked at it and it's all rusty and fallen apart, like the wall itself, by the way. So, and it's useless. And also that the reason they're selling it is because House Republicans introduced a bill saying to sell it before it's totally rusted out and garbage.
They have to sell it or donate it, but don't let it just go to waste.
That's right.
Republican initiated that act.
That's right. So what did my old colleague classmate from high school say? Well, if this is even true, and I doubt it, we still will blame Joe for letting it rust. You're drinking the Kool-Aid, girl, she said to me. Why? Because I believe facts?
You got to get
Kate,
off that
like
Facebook
the autism.
I don't get it. I thought Mexico Kool-Aid paid for that wall. So what's the big deal?
Yeah. So the national conversation, you're a little, you know, bless your heart.
It's just that we're going to have that conversation, Marge. So I just want to be somewhat optimistic that maybe we can get that information out there. I hope.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas to everyone. The Rascals next week, Wednesday, will post a sort of a best of. We'll take some of our favorite conversations over the year, some of the major news stories, and repurpose them here rather than asking everybody to work on Christmas Day. Eric Zorn, Kate Plies, Marge Halperin. Eric, I hope you and your family feel and do well over there. And we're produced by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and we will drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.